Hello and welcome to a special New Year's Eve edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. Things today are a little bit different, as the New Year's resolutions normally wait until January 1st and normally wait to be broken on January 2nd. Here on the Talker, we're doing something a bit different today, just to shake things up for the end of 2021. Today's show will be recorded live via Twitter Spaces. All of that is to give Squawker's social media followers and podcast fans the chance to watch and listen a live show for the first time this season. We're hoping it goes well on every single level, and so far, at this point, so good, apart from my voice nearly breaking. Anyone tuning in to the podcast via Twitter, you can ask questions, you can request some stats, and if you're in the mood, you can even give us some let's say constructive feedback. So the focus today is on the big stat leaders so far in 2021. It's a build up to our The Most Awards later on this month. Anyone that listens to the podcast regularly will know my name is Fergal Brennan, and joining me as ever, whether we're on a record, whether we're on a Twitter, whatever the platform that we're doing a podcast on, I just can't shake this guy off. Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how are you doing?
I'm all right, man. I stick to you like Gentile to Maradona. That's an older reference for younger those, but no one man marks anymore, so I can't really think of a modern one. So, you know, just I'm sticking to him like a man marking.
Ander Herrera
on Eden Hazard, yeah. Ander Herrera on Eden Hazard. God, I'm Ander Herrera. That's horrible.
That's one for the older fans and for the younger fans to get on board with. Obviously, we have Jake as well. Mo and myself are on regulars on the podcast, but Jake pretty much does our job for us every week. Everything that we get, everything that we know, everything that we talk about, everything that we argue about. You can thank Jake for that, because he is the man behind the numbers and the data. Jake, how are we getting on?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. As I said, this is my element, this one, just literally being able to look at the tables that we've got. Obviously we get Opta data provided to us, so this is their data. You can't argue with them, they're the best of the best. And then we're working with 23 as well, who have made a toolbox that we can access all of these leaders from. So that's what we're going to be using today to get through the most stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about this one. I think there's some good stuff to be chatted about in the football world of stats in 2021.
Most definitely. And obviously, when you're trying anything new relating to football, it's important to warm up, try something as a little bit of a stretch. So the first stat that we're going to be looking at is a bit of an easy one. Anyone listening will probably not be shocked by this. So we're going to look at goals scored in this year. So unsurprisingly, Mo, top of the shop is Robert Lewandowski. And this just adds to this idea that we shouldn't, you know, go too mad in the early stages of this record. Let's try with something that nobody is really surprised about. Robert Lewandowski, when it comes to goals, is the Don in European football. Top of the shop, 40 goals in 34 games. Absolutely incredible. But when it comes to Lewandowski, these almost abnormal, alien-like numbers are just par for the course. He is just that good. Is there even the tiniest bit of shock for you that he's the top man for goals?
No, like not at all. Lewandowski's a phenomenal goal scorer, and he's always been a great goal scorer going back to his days at Dortmund, but he's just gotten more and more prolific. And it's like under Klopp, he was really, really good. He scored, I think, 30 plus goals twice. And, you know, then since he's gone to Bayern, he had that first year where he was a bit ropey, not really at his best, but then he's just flown since then. I don't think he's dipped under 40 goals since that second season at Bayern. Like, he had, I think, well, let me see. Yeah, 25 goals first season at Bayern. Since then, 42, 43, 41, 40, 55, 48, and he's got 30 already this season. We're only halfway through. It's a very real possibility he could crack 60 this year. It's a very real possibility. He's a phenomenal goal scorer. And like even he's getting older now. He's like, what is he, 33? He's still going. He'll be 34 in the summer. So, you know, you keep thinking maybe he'll drop off at some point. But because he plays in such a dominant side, and because he is such a player that doesn't necessarily rely on pace, it's like it's not a surprise that he scored loads of goals and that he will continue to score loads of goals. You look at half the time, it's like the ball falls to him and he just touches it, controls it, gets away from his marker and just smashes it in. He's got great technique off either foot with his head as well. He's clutch. He can score in big games. You know, nothing phases the guy. I think it's only been, what, 4 Bundesliga games he hasn't scored in this season? Greuther Fürth, Frankfurt, Arminia Bielefeld and Mainz. Like everyone else he's scored against. That's absurd. That's 4 games out of 17 he hasn't scored in. I mean, just that kind of consistency is ridiculous.
obviously Lewandowski, as we said, 43 goals in Europe's top five leagues, the most this season. So just to clarify on for everyone that's joined, all we're doing this the most on is Europe's top five league games only, because not everyone plays Champions League, not everyone plays Europa League, and cup competitions is hard to get data for, especially when we get into the more interesting stats. So this is league games, top five divisions, January 1st until today. So in terms of most goals scored, the top people, obviously, Robert Lewandowski, 43 goals. Dusan Vlahovic, 33 goals. Erling Haaland, 30 goals. Karim Benzema, 30 goals. Ronaldo, 25. And then we have André Silva, Mohamed Salah, Chiro Immobile, Kylian Mbappe, and Lionel Messi on 24 goals. So that is your top 10 for the most goals scored in 2021.
See, instantly what jumps out about you there is the fact that Haaland has missed a significant chunk of action lately, and he's still that close to the top. He's kind of terrifying. I mean, because Lewandowski's 34, he has the years of experience behind him. He's obviously phenomenal, great goal scorer. But Haaland is like, what, is he 21, 22 max? Like, he's young, he's athletic, and he's had this big injury, two injuries really. I mean, in the end, they're the reasons he's not going to the World Cup, by the way. Obviously, those two injuries coinciding, unfortunately, with the international breaks. Norway didn't have him and they didn't score any goals, or like one goal. So like, they struggle without him. They're not going to the World Cup. Haaland doesn't go into the World Cup. But he's a phenomenon. And then Vlahovic as well. We can't discount that. I think that's more than anyone's ever scored in a calendar year in Serie A. He broke Cristiano Ronaldo's record, didn't he? Or at least equaled it. He's come out of nowhere. Obviously, he's been really good for a while and it's been obvious, but he's really stepping up now. And it's like, to the extent where you're like, okay, he's definitely going to a big club this summer. Like, you can almost pen that in, I would say. Like, he's definitely getting a big, big move for the summer. It's just a matter of, A, how much money Fiorentina are going to get, and B, can he do what Salah did, move to a big club and then elevate his own game?
Well, Mo, this is what I wanted to ask you about Vlahovic. So much of the conversation around Haaland is inevitably paired up with Mbappe. They seem set to be the next stage of the Ronaldo-Messi rivalry in world football, and are their careers going to be interlinked for the next decade? And Vlahovic has slightly come up a little bit on the radar because a lot of people might not watch as much Spanish football as they do Bundesliga or La Liga. And as you say, his goals record is absolutely phenomenal. He's outstripped Kylian Mbappe in terms of goals scored in 2021. He probably will get that move. Depends on who comes in for him, as you say, whether Fiorentina get the money for him. But does his goals back up this idea that he deserves to be joining them two as the next stage, as the next 21 to 25 years of age world-class strikers?
I mean, yeah, he's definitely in the... The thing is, right, you look at it and you can see exactly why Mbappe is in that conversation, right? He's phenomenal. And you look at it, you can see exactly why Haaland is in that conversation, why they're compared to each other. You can see, it's not the same, obviously, but you can see sort of loose echoes of the Messi versus Cristiano debate, whereas one of them is a pure goal scorer, one of them is a great goal scorer, great chance creator, great assist. Obviously, Mbappe is not as rounded as Messi, but you can see the sort of shapes of that same sort of debate. And then Vlahovic has come out of nowhere, and he's almost like the Lewandowski of this debate. So he's not on the same level as Haaland, who is just ridiculous, more than a goal a game. He's not the same level as Mbappe, who is not just a goal a game, his chance creation in the game is an incredible, all-around, really just ridiculously elite forward. And he's the third wheel. He's the guy that just scores the goals. He shows up, where's the goal? Need a goal scoring? Bang, scored a goal. Bang, scored a goal. Bang, scored a goal. He's not as like utterly physically transformative as Haaland is, or as Ronaldo Cristiano was a decade ago. He's tall, he's Eastern European, the echoes of Lewandowski are all there. You know, he's a bit faster than Lewandowski, I think, but you can see exactly where you look at him and you think, okay, that's a very much like the next Lewandowski almost. He's going to have that sort of niche. He's going to be the goal scorer. He's going to have an all-round talent. He's going to be really good. He's going to score loads of goals, but he's never going to be, unless those other two are having a sort of a down year, if it comes down to it, he's never going to be considered on their level necessarily because he's not as physically ridiculous as one of them and he's not as all-round as the other one. But he's phenomenal. He, as in terms of goal scoring, yeah, just the same as Lewandowski basically more or less kept up with Messi and Cristiano those years when they were going crazy. Maybe not quite as much, but more or less kept up. I think Vlahovic will be the same. I mean, again, it all depends on where he goes, but he has the talent to keep going. You can see it in his game. He scores all kinds of goals. He's got a great skill set, left foot, right foot, head. He's very composed, scores tap-ins, scores a very, very impressive goals if he has to as well. it just depends on the team he goes to, because he does seem like he wants to play in a team that's progressive, that, you know, that rolls with the punches. I mean, if he goes to someone like a Chelsea, not that he would, obviously he hasn't got Lukaku, although, well, who knows what's going on there. But if he goes to someone like Chelsea, you know, it's going to be a problem, right? Because they don't play that sort of necessarily attractive, attacking, free-flowing football, whereas I think he would thrive in. I don't think he's going to go to Chelsea. I just think he'll go somewhere. I mean, even thinking of to Man United, I mean, that's, you know, would you send anyone there right now? Any attacking player right there right now with Cristiano there? I wouldn't, but depends on where he goes. But yeah, he absolutely can keep pace with those two in terms of goal scoring. Not in terms of overall quality, but in terms of goal scoring, for sure.
This is why you don't like me on the podcast, but I'm going to give some more context to Vlahovic's incredible score.
Yeah, I love you on the podcast, mate. Give it to me.
So if we look at those, let's just look at Lewandowski, Vlahovic and Haaland, as we said, the guys with 30 plus, or Benzema had 30 goals as well, who had one of his best years ever. So I think we always don't talk about him too much, but unfortunately he's not quite the theme really. So just for Vlahovic, I ran some more numbers based on like the more goal scuff. And when I say I ran numbers, I guess I used the numbers that we're given. To work out sort of XG differential, which for anyone listening that's not sure how that works. So you have your expected goals total, which is the amount of goals an average player would score based on the chances you're getting, the shots you're taking. And then obviously you've got your actual goals scored. And the differential, if it's a big number, it means that you're scoring more than average, which can either mean you're getting quite lucky, you're having a hot streak, or you're just very, very good. So there's Messi, for example, is usually always high up on XG differential because he's supremely talented at sticking it in the top corner. But Vlahovic, interestingly, had an XG differential of 10.33 in 2021 in these league games. So he was expected to score 23 goals, and he scored 33. And when you compare that to Lewandowski and Haaland, who we're as we said, are the other top scorers in this conversation. Lewandowski only improved his expected goals by 0.61. He's in a team that is so dominant and he gets so many good chances that he literally is expected to score 43 goals. So he's incredible in the fact that he's getting in these positions so often, but he was expected to score that many. Whereas Vlahovic, who also scored 9 penalties as well, based on expected goals, was only meant to have 23. So as a 21-year-old striker, there's clear signs that he is good at football. I'm not discrediting that, but anyone that's looking at this sort of 80 million, 120 million euro price tag that Fiorentina are apparently placing on him, you need to be really sure that he's going to repeat that. And obviously people like Haaland have proven that at 21, you can repeat it. For context, he added 5 expected goals. His expected goals differential was 5.17. So he still outperformed his expected goals, but Vlahovic outperformed that again by double. So that's just my little negative Nancy input on Vlahovic's year. It was an incredible year, but was it an incredible year from an incredible player or an incredible year from a good player?
This is how Squawker works, by the way, guys. I go wildly overestimate on everything. And Jake's like, no, come back to reality mode. Come back to reality and pulls me back. And then we meet somewhere in the middle and that's usually how we get our things going. But no, he's absolutely right. Overperforming expected goals. I mean, for the further context, Mason Greenwood in his debut season of Man United overshot his expected goals by miles. Hence the joke, ex-Greenwood. Heung-min Son at the start of last season was overshooting it by miles. And basically the only people that have ever sustained it over a long period of time, and Jake will correct me on this if I'm wrong, is basically Messi and Cristiano. The only people that consistently overshot their expected goals by quite a lot over a long period of time. Haaland looks like he might be doing the same. I don't know. You have to wait and see. But it's just, you know, hot streaks are hot streaks. I have faith that Vlahovic can keep going. But again, I'm a relentless optimist when it comes to attacking football. So, you know. But I think he can. I think he's got the talent, but it all depends on the right making the right move. As Jake said, Lewandowski's at Bayern where they just create chances for fun. If Vlahovic makes a similar move to a similar kind of creative club, powerhouse club, he could keep going, but he has to make the right move.
So we've done goals. And the next thing from that is usually the assists. So the most awards 2021, Europe's top 5 leagues, the most assists are the following. Thomas Müller is the winner with 24 assists in 2021. The next is Filip Kostic from Eintracht Frankfurt with 19. Then we have Dimitri Payet with 14, Moussa Diaby from Bayer Leverkusen with 13, Trent Alexander-Arnold with 13, Toni Kroos 12, Lionel Messi 12, Vincenzo Grifo 12, Zielinski 12, and Jonathan Klaus 12.
That is, I mean, look, the first thing jumps out to me is that Thomas Müller is a ridiculous man. This is the thing with it just shows how dominant Bayern are in the Bundesliga, right? Top goal scorer Bayern, top assister Bayern. They are a chance creation machine. You know, with those two plus Gnabry plus Sané plus Koeman, they're phenomenal. They're such a great attacking unit. Müller is incredible. Müller's outrageous. I quite like Moussa Diaby there. If anyone's playing the new FIFA, he is obviously a menace. With both his regular card and his special card, Moussa Diaby is a menace. This is very, very difficult to play against in FIFA Ultimate Team. But it's a fun list to see Thomas Müller, because Müller's one of those players that he always seems like he's got a chip on his shoulder because he doesn't get the recognition he deserves, which I understand to a degree, because he doesn't get a lot of recognition because he does just sort of seem to float under the radar, where he's not, he's not like a mega star. He's not like a Lewandowski. He doesn't score loads of goals, but he's always there, thereabouts. And I mean, he really struggled. He was one of the ones, actually, I thought was quite interesting. He really struggled. He really thrived under Guardiola. Had his best goal scoring season ever, I do believe, 30 plus goals. And then since Guardiola left, he's sort of been sort of like going through the motions, not really clicking with anyone, just sort of been there or thereabouts. But when Flick came in, and basically he was out of the team originally under Kovac, and that was like a big, everyone was like, oh, Müller's finally finished. They're linking him to Man United yet again. Over and over again, like, is he going to go to Man United? What's going to happen? And then Hansi Flick came in, and Hansi Flick was like, all right, cool, this guy's going back in the team. And then they just powered on, went supernova, won the treble. And he's gone from strength to strength. He's an amazing elite player. We know this, right? We've known. And just I think what sums up how, not just as a player he is, but as a leader, as a presence, because I mean, nothing sums up better than after the Ballon d'Or ceremony when Lewandowski lost to Messi, and everyone was, Lewandowski was being very gracious, oh, Messi's very good, and everyone else, he was clearly offended, right? He was like, this is ridiculous. What a stupid decision. Don't worry, we're going to show, we can't wait to get on the pitch and show how ridiculous it is when we play Barcelona next week. And you're thinking, this guy is fueled by pure spite, and it works, though. It works. He's pure rage is fueled by Müller, and it works for him, though. And look at, they did demolish Barcelona. They could have done it even more if they wanted to. They went easy on them, frankly. And every game he plays, it's like he celebrates goals. It's like the goal net has personally offended him, and he's glad that he's put a ball in the back of the net. This Müller is a crazy, crazy man. He's driven by emotion, I think, but he's statistically so brilliant. The way he technically finds space is so good. The way he can just flick the ball back to Lewandowski, to his goal scorers. He's always such a key part of every Bayern move, because he almost doesn't involve himself in the build-up, in the sense that he waits for the ball to get to the key areas, then he makes sure he's in a space where he can get the ball, draw players to him, and then ping it back to whoever. Like, the amount of one-touch little return passes he gets, return assists he gets, and that's not to downplay his technique. He can play some very thoughtful and thought-provoking passes. He's just a special player, man. He's a very special player. And I think, honestly, if he had hated it going just a little bit more, if he'd been a bit more angry in the summer, he would have scored that goal in Euro 2020. He didn't hate England quite enough. England weren't enough of a threat in his mind for him to score that goal. If they were, he would have scored that goal and England would have been out of the Euros. So, yeah.
Now, we're going to move on slightly from goals and goal scorers and assists to chances created. And Mo, I'm going to throw it straight back across to you, because 2021 is the year of the fullback. We've seen it in the Premier League, we've seen it across Europe, that fullbacks, tactical systems have been set up to essentially bring fullbacks in from the cold, bring them in from standing on the sidelines and whipping in crosses to becoming the creative hubs of teams. And within the Premier League, sometimes we get a little bit blinkered, and we have Trent Alexander-Arnold, João Cancelo, Reece James, plenty of fullback options. But the top dog in terms of chance created in, as Jake said before, the major European leagues is Filip Kostic. He leaves them for dust. 34 big chances created for Eintracht Frankfurt so far this season. He's absolutely phenomenal. But it does follow this similar trend that chances being created are being created from fullbacks en masse. so far this season.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's an interesting symptom of the way the football has developed, because what you found is that fullbacks invariably now are the free man in the final third. And I think that's where it came from, because, you know, the wingers get marked, attacking midfielders get marked. The number 10 has basically evaporated from world football. There's very few of them left. I mean, Bruno Fernandes is basically the last one standing. And it's like, where do you find space? Who can create space? Oh, fullbacks can create space. And so as a function of that, fullbacks, it's like, you know, survival of the fittest. They've devolved and developed this ability to, oh, we're in space, let's create some chances. Trent moving there obviously has been a huge help. You know, they're all sort of in the mold of Dani Alves. You know, Marcelo was seen as been a big feature in the major feature in the Champions League, in Real Madrid's great success in the Champions League. He was sort of the first child of Dani Alves, as it were, right? Like, he was almost a peer of Dani Alves, and then he's sort of just a bit younger, but he's sort of come out of that. And then Trent is now, and then all these guys are now like just sort of, you know, variations on Dani Alves. Even Reece James, honestly, who I always considered to be a very orthodox wingback, isn't actually an orthodox wingback. He can play midfield, he can play defense. Kostic is a converted winger, you know, so that's why I think Kostic has a very high chance to create. Obviously, involves set pieces as well. But he gets to run down the wing. He's very comfortable attacking the area. So that's the way Frankfurt play as well. It's just, let's get these fullbacks / wingbacks. Let's get them into the key positions and let's get them creating chances. And they're always the spare man. And what's going to happen now is football's going to evolve again, and we're going to sort of get fullbacks getting marked out, and some other positions are going to step up. Who knows what that's going to be. But for now, we are almost, like you said, in the age of the fullback. So many dominant ones. Can't really not mention Joshua Kimmich. He's a midfielder now, and he's having some other issues now with COVID. But before then, you know, played fullback for Bayern, was run a treble playing fullback for Bayern. You know, phenomenal player, really, really good for Germany as well. Wingback, devastating creator, both from open play and set play. Basically, the German Trent, but he actually has been able to play midfield. Whereas when you put Trent in midfield, it doesn't work at all. It's funny, Trent, honestly, because when he plays midfield, he looks rubbish. But when he actually starts on the fullback, he basically plays midfield anyway, and it looks good. That's just how football works. It's very strange like that sometimes. But yeah, fullbacks, man, fullbacks.
I'm going to come in with the full list, give everyone the full leaders. We just tweeted it out on Twitter as well. So obviously this is the most chances created in Europe's top five leagues in 2021. So we have Filip Kostic winning that with 123. Thomas Müller is next with 110. Trent Alexander-Arnold with 108. And then the only other player to reach 100 is Mac's favourite player, Dimitri Payet, on 100 there as well. But the thing that I want to add to this conversation about why we're seeing these players up here, Thomas Müller is the only player in that list that is not a set piece taker. So obviously the chances created now is there's always an emphasis on set pieces. And my perception of how these fullbacks are being used is almost like, and I'm not a massive NFL fan, so forgive me if I'm butchering this cross-reference, but I think they're almost like the specials teams people on the team. So you've got these really, really technically gifted players that are playing fullback now. In Liverpool's team, that Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold both take the corners. Kostic takes every set piece for Frankfurt, playing left wing back. So some people are now using these fullbacks. Obviously, they're gifted footballers. And the reason they're racking up these chances created is because they're crossing it a lot, obviously, because they're the free man, as Mo said, and crosses are a good way to rack up those chances created. But they are taking a lot of the set pieces. So to give context in a converse list, let's look at chances created from open play the most in 2021. Because obviously Kostic, 123, is super impressive. But when we do our open play, Thomas Müller now leads again, and we've already spoken about him. So 106 chances created from open play this year with him. So only four from set pieces. Filip Kostic is now second still anyway, but it drops down to 79. So what's that, about 44 or so from set pieces, which again is fine. If you're a good set piece taker, then by all means, that's a weapon to use. And then we have Bruno Fernandes dropping in here at 79 as well, with Trent Alexander-Arnold at 67 and Insigne on 66 and Mohamed Salah 65. So all of a sudden you get a different list of the most, and this is chances created in terms of people that are involved in open play. And remember, a chance created to confirm that anyone that may or may not know exactly the definition, it is just a pass that leads to someone else shooting. So expected assists and things like that are all good ways to further look at whether these chances are good chances or not. But yeah, Thomas Müller, again, completely ahead of everyone else in that list. And Kostic and Trent are still there from open play, so they aren't just set-piece merchants, as everyone would like to say. But it's just interesting to provide that different bit of context as well.
All right, that was good. Look, in terms of the age of the fullback, I think we're definitely in it. I'm curious to see what comes next, what the reaction is. There's always a reaction to everything. So the reaction to Guardiola's pass, reaction to the physical style of football in the 2000s, was Guardiola's passing football, passing and pressing, beautiful passing football. The reaction to that has been hyper-pressing in the German style, right? And then now we're sort of settling into a sort of meld of the two with fullbacks emerging. What's going to happen? What's going to happen next? I mean, who knows, really? That's going to be quite interesting.
I was going to suggest, should we wrap up with one last stat that's really stuck out for me in terms of the numbers that Jake has dug around in. As we mentioned at the top of the show, myself and Mo tend to lend the debate and the argues to this, but the numbers are Jake's baby. So I want to look at a defensive metric. We've talked about goals, we've talked about assists, chance created, etc. But I always enjoyed looking at the defensive side of it as well, and that's tackles. And based on the numbers that you flagged up, Jake, just reading from the notes there, we're in a position where it is becoming a bit more back in vogue. The technique behind tackling, the numbers are measured as a stronger metric so far this season. So I just wanted to look at that. And there's one big jump out name from tackles, successful tackles so far in 2021. And it's also someone that could possibly be in line for a big move this summer.
I'm just getting up the full list. We've got so many numbers on spreadsheets that things take a while to load. But the most tackles made in Europe's top five leagues in 2021, the winner of that award is Aurelien Tchouaméni from Monaco. And I may have mispronounced that, but obviously everyone probably knows that name by now, considering how many teams he's linked with. So he's top with 133. Then you have Benjamin Andre with 129. Lauren Abergel with 123, Wilfred Ndidi with 118, Javi Galan with 108, Casemiro and Madi Kamara with 105, and Tottenham fullback Emerson Royale with 103. So the man at the top of that list, as you've mentioned, is someone that everyone is going to be talking about. And from the Monaco sporting director, I think, has now offered himself to Newcastle, apparently. He compared him to a young Steven Gerrard, and Cesc Fabregas has said as well that this tackling, ball-winning destroyer that you're seeing at the moment is just sort of almost the first stage of his development as a footballer. And with Conte not really fit or not being able to keep fit for long periods of time, and Chelsea being linked with Rice and Tchouaméni as the two midfielders, I think we're going to see his name linked to them in January, but if not, definitely in the summer.
I mean, this thing with, if you're going to trust, there are a few midfielders, but if you're going to trust someone to understand how to diagnose someone, you trust Cesc Fabregas, right? If he's saying this kid's got it, I would, like, 9 times out of 10, I would say, yeah, this kid's got it. Like, you know, I would bet on Cesc's opinion 99 times out of 100. Like, he usually gets it right. Okay, Alex Leb, maybe not, but everyone else, you know. And Tchouaméni, you look at him and he's a phenomenal talent. He really, really excels at one. It's kind of like, in a way, he's comparable to Camavinga. Not different kind of players completely, but Camavinga excels at a couple of things, but the potential for him to grow into other things is really huge. And that's what's so good about young midfielders. You want to see them excelling. Obviously, you want them to have technique and ability and stuff, but if they can really excel in one area or one or two areas, and then you're like, okay, then you can expand their game into everything. You know, players who are all round and everything, that's also good. But I feel like the ones with the really highest ceilings are the ones who are already absolutely excellent at one thing. And you can just fill out the rest of their game with coaching and with experience. So Camavinga is a great example. I think Tchouaméni, you look at him now, he's a phenomenal defensive presence, right? You look at Man United's midfield, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, put Tchouaméni in there, because not only is he a very good defensive presence, he advances the ball really well, really good progressive passes. Moves the ball forward, which is something that Man United desperately need to do if they want to make Ralph Ragnick's system work. Chelsea, again, as Jake says, desperately crying out for some central midfield authority alongside Jorginho because they really miss Kante. He's having trouble with injuries. You know, obviously, if Kante gets right, Kante's on a different level entirely. But will he ever get right, or will he get right in time to help them in the Champions League, help France win the World Cup? Who can say? So Tchouaméni makes sense for them. They're literally, like Jay says, any top club you name in the world, you can see where he fits in. The only one, you know, Real Madrid, maybe you could argue Casemiro's there, but then he'll replace Casemiro or play alongside Casemiro in a, like, frankly terrifying defensive midfield front there. Though, imagine those two and Camavinga, or those two and Fede Valverde, or those two and... Imagine you want to keep Toni Kroos going until he's 40, right? Which was his passing, and you could see why. Imagine you give him Camavinga and Casemiro and Tchouaméni, or Tchouaméni and Camavinga's protection. Like, he'll play for 50 years, you know, until he's 50. That's... So Tchouaméni could play for any team in the world. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Literally any team in the world. He's phenomenal. He's genuinely special. Although, shout out, I will say this, one more thing about tacklers. Shout out Aaron Wan-Bissaka, man. If he could have played for Ralph Rangnick, he would have got himself in those teams. Actually, that's not true. He's really dropped off this season. He's been struggling. But I love Aaron Wan-Bissaka, as everyone knows. And I'm sure he was close to the top 10, was he, Jake?
No, he's actually had a season to forget, really, in terms of his output. And interestingly enough, in 2021, João Cancelo had more tackles and interceptions combined than Aaron Wan-Bissaka, which, when you consider that Cancelo's been lauded as, again, to move on to fullbacks, as this sort of game-changing fullback, getting assists and known for his passing, the fact that he also had really, really strong output in tackles and interceptions. And also, I think he has the most shots for Man City this season. So that guy can literally do everything.
The age of the four. It's just the age of Cancelo, isn't it? The age of Cancelo, the age of Trent. Cancelo is spectacular. That is crazy, though, that his defensive output. I kind of figured it with the tackles because he does a lot of pressing. So I figured that and basically plays midfield, right, when he plays left back. But the interceptions, that's really impressive because that shows he's sweeping in passing channels. He's looking at through balls in behind. He's stopping them. That's really impressive as well. To combine the two, you know, that shows a real defensive presence. To go with, obviously, what, like you said, Jake, a phenomenal offensive output as well. He's a really balanced sort of... But what's funny, of course, is that he does his best work from left back and he's right-footed. But, I mean, that's a function of the system, you would imagine. Like, if he went to another team and didn't play under Guardiola, you'd imagine he'd probably do his best work from right back. But in a team that's going to own possession like Guardiola's is, then I suppose it makes sense, really, that he could do that.
Yeah, and the... I was going to go for the... No, sorry, I thought I was muted and then unmuted myself, but muted myself. So we're giving a clinic in Twitter spaces here, if not the stats. But the alternative stat that you can look at with tackles, and again, everyone hold on, this may get slightly too boring, but obviously we're looking at volume of tackles made there, and Tchouaméni, that he may just be top of that list because Monaco play a really sort of end-to-end game in the sense that there's a lot of turnovers and he's sweeping everything up and pressing a lot. But the alternative side to it is looking at how clean a tackler you can be. And this is a sort of stat that the tackles in itself, there are actually lots of different definitions for it. But when we say most tackles made, that means that he's tackling a player and the ball may end up with his team or go out for a throw, but we're awarding him for making that tackle. Whereas there's actually three parts of a tackle in which it is that makes up a tackle attempt. So there's that tackle. You can also make a foul from an attempted tackle, which isn't deemed as successful because you could do something. Obviously, if it's in the edge of the box or in the penalty area, it's not great. And also you can be dribbled past, which is obviously everyone's favorite negative stat. So combining all that, you can then create true tackle success rate, which again is other people have spoken about and it's out there. You may have seen it. So when we look at the cleanest tacklers in 2021 in Europe's top five leagues, and I've done this for people that have attempted or made at least 50 tackles so that you're not just getting someone that does one tackle and then is perfect with it. So the cleanest tackler in Europe's top five leagues in 2021 is Stefan de Vrij with a 76.92% true tackle success rate with 52 successful tackles made. The second is Arsenal loanee William Saliba at 75%. Third is Tyrique Mitchell, Crystal Palace left back, with 74%. And then Norwich right back Max Ahrens, who obviously has played fewer games but still made the 50 tackles with 74%. So first interesting thing for me is that Crystal Palace, obviously, if you train against Wilfried Zaha, you become a master of the tackling art. And also the any Arsenal fans listening, that Saliba stat is pretty impressive for someone that may or may not have a future at the club. But also the top of the list, Stefan de Vrij. Virgil van Dijk obviously went a whole season without being dribbled past, and now they have the cleanest tackler in Europe alongside him. So World Cup, potentially one of the strongest defences on paper there.
I mean, yeah, imagine a back three of van Dijk, de Vrij and De Ligt. I mean, that's pretty monstrous, isn't it? That's De Vrij is phenomenal. I think he's really underrated as well, in part because he went to Inter. With no respect, no disrespect to Inter, they're great. Sorry, our champions, but their media profile has dipped a little bit. Like, if he'd gone somewhere a bit more higher profile, he's a really phenomenal defender. I think he's quite impressive, quite solid, sturdy. The Dutch seem to just be churning out great centre backs right now, don't they? I mean, they've got Sven Botman as well at Lille coming through. I mean, he's due a big move in the summer, so it's a fun situation. True tackle success rate. That, and yeah, Mitchell is obviously. I mean, you know, you're joking, Jake, about Zaha, but I think you might be right, to be honest, because Wan-Bissaka, when he was at Palace, did those and put up those kind of amazing numbers, and then went to Man United and did it as well. But the longer he spent away from Wilfried Zaha in training, like, and the longer he spent with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in training, he's dropped off dramatically. Like, you look at him now compared to a year ago, he's like nowhere near the same player. So maybe it is, you have to keep training with Wilfried Zaha every day in training, it makes you a better tackler. So, you know, there must be something special Zaha does that helps you with that, obviously, because, you know, you look at other great dribblers, their fullbacks don't become amazing tacklers, do they? So obviously Zaha needs to go and looks to go into coaching and when he hangs up his boots, because he's pretty great.
So you're both absolutely correct. The most take-ons completed in Europe's top four leagues in 2021 is Adama Traore with 180. Then second is Alan Saint-Maximin. Again, another one that I would have thought was on everyone's list for top five with 146. 123 is Lionel Messi, so still in top three despite what Mo said. Mo thinks he's just chilling out in Paris. Javi Galan, who also, if you remember, if Anne were listening, was in the top 10 for tackles made as well, fullback in La Liga. He was 122, which to me is a name that I immediately want to know more about, the fact he's appeared in two of those. Then you've got Alphonso Davies with 116, and then the only other player with 100 is Kylian Mbappe with 111. So those are your most take-ons completed in 2021.
It's preposterous, it really is. He's ridiculous. We've known this for a long time. He's the greatest, probably the greatest player of all time, certainly top three. He's just miraculous. It's been a privilege to have watched him during his peak years. You know what I mean? This is the sort of thing where, I mean, it's not quite you'll tell your grandkids about him thing, because YouTube exists now, so you won't need to tell your grandkids. They will find out about him on YouTube. We've been lucky to watch him. But what we're seeing as well from St. Max and from Traore is this incredible technique. I mean, and both of them are just such phenomenal. If they could just harness their end product a bit, just a little bit more. Like St. Max, obviously, one great goal against Man United the other day, then misses the sitter from 2 yards, could have buried United. On another day with better finishing, he would have had a hat-trick. So, you know, you don't want to say focus more on finishing too much of these guys, because what's so good about them is the way that they dribble so evocatively and so brilliantly and skillfully. Like if you then, like, you look at Cristiano as a great example. He was a very skillful dribbler when he was a younger player, very, very evocative, very, you know, really tried a lot of interesting things. Then he wanted to score more goals. He wanted to win the Ballon d'Or. So he focused more on scoring goals, and he lost a lot of that dribbling magic. It's not that he couldn't do it. He just didn't do it because he wanted to score more goals. And now he can't do it. Obviously, he's 30, whatever he is, years old. The only real dribbling move he's done all season is when he put Ben White on the seat of his pants. But other than that, you have to make that choice. And so I'm almost grateful that they don't have a good end product, that they just choose to be these pure entertainers. You know what I mean?
Here we go then. I've got the list. So this is the most passes into the final third in 2021. Number one is Trent Alexander-Arnold with 456. There's actually a goalkeeper second, Stefan Ortega Moreno. So I'm going to discount him because he is probably just absolutely lumping it into the final third rather than progressing it as we said is what we're looking for here. Then we've got Sergio Busquets with 435, Ashley Westwood, who played a couple of really amazing passes at Old Trafford last night. If anyone was watching that, is there with 418. Joshua Kimmich with 400, Manuel Locatelli with 400, and then Dani Parejo with 391. As you mentioned, Toni Kroos, he actually hasn't played too much this year. So he is usually very high on this list, but has half the amount of minutes of those guys. So didn't quite make it in terms of output. But yeah, Trent up there with a massive 456. But then you've got your classic Busquets, everyone writing him off, but he still finds his way there.
Busquets is something. The funniest thing was, obviously, you watched him for Barca and he was just rubbish. And you're thinking, what's going on? Is he really in decline? He looks like he's in decline. Then you play for Spain, you're like, oh, he's good. What's going on here? And then you realise, with all due respect, he's being coached by Ronald Koeman at Barcelona. And then, okay, that makes sense. And then you look at him since Xavi's come up and he looks brilliant. And yeah, we've all been like writing off, he's too old, he's this, he's that. He's 33. Like, there, Modric is 36 or 35, pushing 36, dominating. It, as long as the system is there, you can play until you're into your mid-30s, maybe even your late 30s these days, with fitness and nutrition being what it is. So Barca have a lot of old players who need to be moved on. Busquets, for me, is not one of them. You see there, passes into the final third. He's still getting the ball into the final third beautifully. What Barca do with it in the final third since Messi's gone is a bit terrible, to be honest, but you know, he can get it there perfectly, and I think that he's going to be just fine going forward under Xavi. Especially, he's going to really thrive with Gavi, with Pedri, with all these other guys playing with him. But Trent, man, Trent is just—it's just so special. It's like, and I feel bad for Reece James, right? Because Reece James is always going to be compared to Trent, and Reece James is a phenomenal player. There's no doubt in my mind. Reece James is a very, very genuinely special generational talent, sorry to use the buzzword of football Twitter, but he's incredible. But he's never Trent. He's never going to be Trent. Trent is just something completely different. And it's very rare England produces a player as good as Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's very rare. Like, this kid is world-class level, like genuine, not like, oh, he's world-class right now. You know, no, this kid is like potentially and probably will mark a generation of players, right? Like Dani Alves did it in world football, like in the mid-2000s, there will be a before and after Dani Alves. There is in football. We've seen this. And Trent follows on from Dani Alves. Trent, for me, there's going to be before and after Trent in English football, unquestionably. He's incredible.
Something else, another little bonus one. If you want to look at passes into the box, Antonio Candreva takes top spot with 492. Again, this is very, very friendly to those that take them from set pieces. And with a bit more time, we could do it with just open play passes. But 492, Candreva. Trent is then second, 479. And Filip Kostic, for anyone that joined us right at the beginning, is there with 418. So not necessarily progressive passes as much, but putting it in the most dangerous areas, I guess, if you wanted a little extra bit of stat there. So the most headed goals in Europe's top five leagues in 2021 is actually André Silva. So another Portuguese player. It's funny, isn't it? Because Cristiano Ronaldo, we know, is awesome in the air. Jota has appeared as someone that's really good in the air for his size. But in fact, it's another Portuguese player that is at the top of the list. So 9 headed goals in Europe's top five leagues in 2021, followed by Anthony Modeste with 8, Ludovic Ajorque with 8. With 7, pardon me. And then there's Sasa Kaladzic from Stuttgart, who I think is about 6'8". He's got 6, and Matija Destra on 6. Diogo Jota is on 4. And remember, this is just league goals, though. So I know he's added a lot of headed goals to his repertoire since he joined Liverpool, but not as many in the Premier League. And he didn't really get any at all for Wolves. So there we go. Headed goals is the final stat of today's The Most 2021 Request Your Stat Leaders Twitter space. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your requests. And Mo, thank you for your colour commentary on all the lists.
Right, that's it. We're going to call it a day for this special edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. We've had a couple of tech issues, but overall, I think we've got a fairly decent half-term report from our followers and listeners. As always, it's been brilliant getting you on the show and getting some interactions and getting some chats going with podcast followers and fans. Mo, Jake, brilliant as ever. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
As Jake mentioned before, we're going to be back in 2022 with some great shows, great content. So make sure you check it out then. Have a fantastic new year. To echo Mo's sage advice, stay safe and have a fantastic start to 2022. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again very, very soon.